we have set aside also an amount of 15 million rands.
Advocate, if you can just hold on.
Yeah.
Honorable Musinga.
I just wanted to inquire whether there's still the opportunity to buy shares. the company is 100% owned by the government, and we have no intention of listing. thank you very much. We also set aside an amount of 15 million for social corporate responsibility. We especially focusing on rural schools and schools in township to assist with equipment such as science laboratories and mathematics. Focuses more on the youth development. So we are looking at, we are dealing with that. Already we have passed that resolution to that effect. And this year we are commissioning a project. It's an office complex. That will be phase one of the complex, wherein we intend to build offices and our academy, ATA, which is Air Traffic Academy, Aviation Training. We intend to do that. We have already applied to, with assistance of the Department of Transport, for accreditation by the Department of High Education. So we are really working hard to ensure that at least we contribute. And the focus is on skill development, because we really want to empower our youth, especially from rural areas and townships. So that's what we are focusing on this year. And also we resolve as a board and working in conjunction with management to deal with the issues of qualified audit. But I'll hand over to the CEO to do the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Transport and all the members who are here, my colleagues from SAMHSA, and I think there are also members from the department who are here with us. Chairperson and members, I've got 50 slides here, of which the first slide is obviously the one that you see, and the last slide is the thank you slide. And so I've got 48 slides, but I'm going to try and run through them very, very quickly to allow an opportunity to for enough time for questions. We have had the engagement with the committee last year, I think it was December or late November, of which we've explained our situation as the chairman has indicated, that we, for the first time in probably in the last 15 plus years, we've received a qualified report. And that for us is was a shock. It's the same auditor that has been auditing us for the past 3 years. So what changed was one of the questions that were asking us. However, we did not want to dwell so much on that issue. We wanted to say, let's fix what needs to be fixed and put all the efforts in making sure that we do the right thing in terms of governance. So you will see that in the presentation, we will dwell, I'll spend a little bit of time there with the assistance of the CFO who's here with us, the acting CFO, to explain the measures that we've put in place and what we've identified and what we think going forward needs to be done in order to be able to, that we don't find ourselves in this situation again in future. I'm saying this also taking cognizance that as a state-owned company, we are the hands and feet of government. So we are doing what government, whatever we're doing it on behalf of government. And we are supposed to be leading by example and to do everything correctly in terms of governance and the other issues that relate to that. So we want to correct that, and if there are things that we have found, we have taken the necessary measures, of which I will talk to as I go along with the presentation. So to start the presentation very quickly, this is just the background. I noticed the screen in front is not so clear because of the lights, but I see the site monitors are a bit better. We are found by an Act of Parliament, Act number 45, of which we are a sister company to the Airports Company of South Africa, AXA, which was found by an Act, Act number 44 of Parliament, with the shareholder minister being the Minister of Transport. Our core task is to provide air traffic management solutions and associated services on behalf of the state. That's coming down from, of course, from ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization, of which it works on standards and recommended practices, of which it interacts with the Civil Aviation Authority of South Africa as a regulator, or as a safety regulator to us, which promulgates those regulations and standards, of which then everyone has to abide for. As a state-owned company, again, of course, we have a governance framework. We have a shareholder compact in terms of Section 52 of the PFMA, and also, of course, a corporate plan, of which we currently just finalized last weekend, and we will be submitting tomorrow to the department for interaction for and finalization. We also have KPIs, of course, that are monitored on a quarterly basis with the department. And we have a framework also for ethical leadership through the Social and Ethics Committee, the subcommittee of the board, which is also a statutory body. And we're looking at achieving high moral and ethical standards. So we have these policies in place in the organization, which makes sure that no one is bigger than the organization. And of course, OAS is a bit outdated. Now when I talk to King 3, we are subscribing to King 4. And we have complied with, and we are complying with all the provisions of the code. ATNS was incorporated in 1993, coming out of the Department of Transport, as I indicated by the Act, and our mandate is to provide air traffic management solutions and associated services on behalf of the state in accordance with ICAO standards recommended practice, as well as the South African regulations and technical standards. Naturally, a lot of people know this as we provide air traffic control, which is providing the control of air traffic across the delegated airspace and the sovereign airspace of the Republic of South Africa. And we do that on the basis of this Act. Our mission and vision, I stated, we want to be the preferred supplier of air traffic management solutions and associated services in the continent as well as in international markets. That is related, if you see the African continent and international markets, is because of the expansion program or the growth view or to enable the company to be sustainable so that we do not come back to government to ask for funding. And our mission is to provide safe, which is the first price. We sell safety as a core product, and of course, expeditious and efficient air traffic management solutions to our customers and clients. We have values that encompass this, of which we continue and abide by, and everyone we live, we strive to live with values, and that is what we look at. And as you'll see again, it's the safety and accountability being top of the list. And then we have six strategic imperatives, and these are like broad-based statements. They are very, very static. If you want to understand of what an organization or the company we do, we're basically based on these six key areas, which is to deliver continuous improvement of our safety performance. Again, safety is the first. To become a transformative organization that invests in its people, And when we talk about transformation, we're not only talking about people transformation in terms of employment equity, we're also talking about how we do business. We want to continuously to be on par with the world or world standards, or to be slightly ahead, so that we can be able to achieve the best services for our country. The next one is to provide efficient and traffic management solutions and associated services that met the needs of expectations of the ATM community. When you talk about the ATM community, we're talking about everyone from people who are flying balloons for recreational services, or reasons, to people who are flying Airbus 380 for commercial reasons, carrying 650 passengers on board. Of course, it is key that we maintain a long-term financial sustainability. You'll see that the company is very healthy whilst we have received this qualified report, but the sustainability of the organization in all aspects of it is very sustainable. We're financially sound, as well as we have a very good human resource base to be able to carry the work that is required in terms of operations. Whilst we have not, as you know, in South Africa had a fatal commercial airline accident in this country since I can remember, other than probably the Heidelberg some years back. And we are playing a leading role in the deployment of air traffic management in Africa and selected international markets. When we say that, we talk about international markets which are selected, and they come and we choose them very carefully. We are currently providing services in St. Helena, an island right in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, somewhere of which is actually subsidizing and making sure that we get additional revenue so that we can support the business and make the cost of making business in South Africa less expensive. And finally, we deploy and use leading technologies for the benefit of the ATM community. As I indicated, that we want to be more or less on par or slightly ahead with the rest of our counterparts around the world. In terms of strategic imperatives, this slide here is just to indicate that whilst we have these operational requirements and the mandate, we understand that we are not living in a vacuum, operating in a vacuum. So when we do plans and developing a strategy, we look at the National Development Plan from government, and we also look at the African Union Agenda 2063, because we're also doing operations in the rest of the continent, and we're also part of Africa. And of course, from the operational side, we look at the International Civil Aviation Organization framework and plans, which is including what is called the GANP, which is the Global Air Navigation Plan. So we integrate all those for an output to be able to provide those, what I call ATNS business, which is the air traffic services, elaborated below there of what it is, and the air navigation infrastructure in terms of the ATNS Act, and of course the training institution, because we cannot, we are the only people or the area where we can train air traffic controllers as well as engineers who can work in our environment. So we have an academy that actually does that, of which the chairman referred to, of which we also providing services for other people coming from somewhere else in the continent. I'm not going to dwell on the slide, but it just attempts to show the services that we provide. This is more like infrastructure. It's a bit technical, so if with your permission, I'll skip on it unless you will have questions later on it. And this slide here, it talks into, shows the airports that we operate in the country. The ones in red are what we call the AXA airports, of which we provide separate services in terms of the statutory provision. And then the ones in green, like the Lanserias, the Krugers, the Polokwanes, the Mahikengs, which are either all privately owned or owned by the local government or the provincial government, we provide services there on contract. So we work directly with them. Anyone else can take over the services. As you probably know, that we used to be in Richards Bay, and now Richards Bay is operated by a different company who provides air traffic control services in Richards Bay. We are not happy with that, but it's something that we are working on. And then, of course, the area of coverage is the 22 million square kilometers, which is about 10% of the world's space. The green part on the left-hand side, not Madagascar, is what we cover, which is the land area of South Africa, as well as the right down to the South Pole and about halfway towards Brazil on the left-hand side and also halfway towards Australia on the right-hand side. And, of course, we also provide services for Lesotho at above level 145, which is 14,500 feet, as well as for Swaziland on a 24-hour basis. So if you have any aircraft that is flying on those spaces, we have an agreement with them, of which we have revenue also on that. We also provide a little bit to Namibia, which is not shown here, which is about 60 nautical miles just above the Orange River, and about 80 nautical miles outside to the Atlantic Ocean on your left-hand side. So across that, they are also still under the control of OR Tambo approach and route services. This is just a summary of the services that we provide. One of our flagships is the satellite network, of which we are kind of the telecom of aviation in the continent. It's the first of its kind in the world. It's been now recognized globally as a very important project where for the first time we're using satellites as a means of communication for aviation. So we provide, we transmit data and also transmit direct speech, which is the communication, which was a huge problem in Africa as a whole, that the communication was not so good between airlines and the ground. This service of which we own and maintain is is one of our flagship projects. And of course the rest, as you can see, there are some of the areas including billing and chatting, of which we sell, as I indicated, that we try to supplement the regular revenue that we get from airlines. You will see later on why we are emphasizing on getting these services also on board and strengthening them, and of which in order to be able that we still generate more revenue to be able to keep the business sustainable. I'm also not going to dwell too much on the slide, but it just shows the interconnectivity of the network. We also connect for SADC and also what we call Northeast Africa, which goes right up to Libya, Yemen, Saudi Arabia. And we will be hopping to India very soon. And we also have interconnectivity with the Western region, of which has got their own satellite network. And we continue to work closely together. We've just signed recently an MOU to continue those services and that cooperation, which is mostly the ASECNA 17 states, which are formerly called the Francophone states. And here, this is just to show that we have taken cognizance also of the 9-point plan coming from the State of the Nation address by the President. I think it was 2 years ago. Time flies. And now and we're still working on some of this. And we picked some of the points of which we can contribute on in relation to the business that we do. So these are some of them. And this is just to indicate to the members of the committee that we have incorporated that into our planning and also into our action plans. This slide here is also just an indication also on the linkage between the National Development Plan, the government, the DOT, Department of Transport, governmental outcomes, of which there's 14 of them. We've taken those that are applicable, of which we can contribute on, and then we link those to our strategic imperatives in the work that we do to say, how can we contribute to the national development as an organization and as an organ of state to be able to do that. This is just a continuation of that. I'm going to move to the other slide. The chairman indicated earlier, we are putting quite a lot of emphasis and effort on the community-based project. We call this a license to operate within our communities. So we are participating in winter schools like the one in the middle picture, and also the Mandela Day and all other activities. We are involved in developing computer laboratories to science laboratories around the country. What you see there at the bottom is one of the other CSI flagships of which we are going to be rolling out this year. It's slightly delayed now. That is a mobile vehicle which is currently a pilot. We're going to be probably having more of these. And this is to make assist in making awareness in aviation, because we've realized that there's not a lot of awareness amongst our people when it relates to aviation. So we're going to be driving these vehicles during the JAP activities, which is the Joint Aviation Awareness Program, which we conduct with South African Airways, the Air Force, and other entities in aviation. And this will be having simulators in there that the kids can play and participate and really have a touch and feel of what aviation is about and of what we are doing in our business. So we're hoping that since our country is so large, we're probably going to be needing more vehicles that are going to be stationed at the strategic areas where we can continue to provide that awareness in different forms of media or communication to our communities. The next slide just shows the, in summary, a 10-point plan in terms of our sustainability strategy, our sustainability and climate change strategy. So we are looking at this in many, many different forms. Of course, we sometimes do not have a direct impact on this, and such as putting low energy consuming light bulbs and things like that. However, our biggest area is on the emissions by aircraft when they are flying in the airspace. So the shorter the route, the less fuel they burn, so the less CO2 and energy gases that they dump in the atmosphere. So we provide that programs like what we call the performance-based navigation that allows the aircraft to take more efficient routes when it's coming into land, and what we call continuous climb and continuous descent operations that allows, I'm sure you will have noticed that lately, when the aircraft comes to land, they shut down the engines and it just glides. And then they will only start the engines a little bit up, what they call controlled landing, just before it lands, so that if you have to abort, you're not starting the aircraft from scratch, then it can take off. So that's the only time where it's really burning fuel. That is contributing to that. We've had programs that we've done with other countries also, right from Dubai and also from Sao Paulo, from Brazil to South Africa, to make sure that airlines are actually burning as less fuel as possible, and as a result of that, dumping less inert gases. And of course, also in airlines, we also talk about noise abatement. We design our procedures in such a way that the aircraft don't fly over places of worship, of schools, at a lower range, and also into built areas. Unfortunately, we can't control this in all the cases. Sometimes people will come and build after the airport has been built, and then you have that noise. When it comes to employment equity, this is just a pictorial, a graphical view of what has happened since 12-13 to this financial year. The key thing that you'll see there is that we're now sitting at 75.12. That is, of course, at the end of the financial year last year. We have actually now gone slightly higher. We have met and exceeded our targets. And the important thing is that there is continuous growth from where we started, taking into account that this organization in 1993, when it was formed, it only had 300 staff members. Now we have 1,200 plus staff members. So we've created a lot of jobs, and not just jobs, but quality jobs in this organization. And you'll see also in terms of the females, we're sitting at 44.8. We're struggling a little bit here, and specifically in the more managerial and senior levels, especially in the operational environment. We're working hard, although, to make sure that the pipeline is continuously being fed. We're recruiting about 20, 25 people every quarter who have the good marks in maths and English. And we are continuing to do that, and they must be South Africans. And unfortunately, we do a lot of good training in South Africa. So we get poaching from countries like Dubai and the Middle East, and circles who actually buy human resources. We don't buy, we develop human resources. So that's what we're continuously doing also as a contribution into job creation in the country. And we also have a target of 3 for the people with disabilities. That was a board target. After we exceeded the 2, which is the national target, and we're currently sitting at 3.31, and this some of the people who are bringing in as interns and we absorb to the organization, and of course to relevant areas, because in some areas they cannot work, and especially in the towers we do not have lifts in most towers, and you have to climb the stairs, so we cannot have access into those places. And then these are just this is just a breakdown of which we monitor to that level. This is the ADCO ones. These are the guys who sit at the tower and look at the aircraft when it's about to land, about 5 nautical miles, and they allow the aircraft to depart from the airport. And then we have the ADCO twos. These are the guys who sit in the what I call the regional airports, of which they are actually providing the services of where. Approach and en route, but just not using technology, just using the not using the technology, but using the position and the reporting of the aircraft in order to be able to navigate in the airspace. This is the last batch of the air traffic controllers. They are the same as the ADCO 2s, except that these guys, they use technology to provide the service. These are the ones where we have when we lose air traffic controllers, we lose them from this area. After having paid a lot of money, and we've tried all retention strategies for them, including having a 3-month resignation period. And it still doesn't stop them going for dollars in the Middle East. So that is the situation that we're living in, and we've taken it that, as I indicated earlier, that we will continue to train and ensure that these upper echelons of this category of air traffic controllers, that it's also occupied by women and younger people. And then the air traffic services employment equity in general, you see this is across the board, is at 70.1%, which is above the 65% target. Although, as you've seen the detail on the previous slides that we have just shown. And, of course, some of these issues that I was talking about, specifically the CSI projects, we're also working, we try to pull the service providers that we partner with, to be able to provide some of the services that we need into those schools. And we, of course, screen those properly so that it's not seen as if they are getting preference against the other service providers. This is the female part. You'll see we're sitting at 42.43. We hope that in the next few years we will be able to meet the 52 national distribution in terms of demographics, and then we will, I'll say, more or less have achieved what we are aiming for, and then we'll go forward as we proceed with running the business. And then you will see here we're spending, our payroll spend has increased from 2% in 2013 to 8.13% of our payroll. So we're spending quite a lot of money in training, which again is creating job creation. One of the key things that we are doing with the academy is the chairman indicating that we are in the process of registering unit standards, and also with the Department of Higher Education, is that we are able, that the academy, that people who come out of there, if they do not complete the program, that we are still able to get credit somewhere else. So that will allow that our students, they are able, that they don't lose everything or that time that they spent when they were with us and they were not able to complete the program, that they can use those credits to do something else somewhere that might suit their career ambitions. So yes, that's where we are for now in terms of the expenditure on training. This one I'm just going to go through very quickly. You've got the slides with you there on hard copy. This is really just to focus. I think that is on page 15, the top slide, which talks into what we have achieved as an organization. We're looking quite a lot in changing the human resource focus versus the infrastructure focus. We've spent millions and millions making sure that our infrastructure performs very well. We noticed that we probably had not been doing very well on the human resource side. So we've put an emphasis on that. And of course, in the Women Empowerment Program, as you see on bullet number 5, they are now, and youth and people with disabilities, there are specific programs that we are running there. As I speak, we've got 10 interns of people with disabilities that who are in the organization, of which then they can decide on which areas they prefer to participate in, and then we can absorb them. And the sub-bullets there under the last, the fifth bullet, is just showing some of those programs. And the ATA, of course, again, there's a couple of achievements that we've had in this area. We have been recognized by IATA, which is the airlines association around the world. They cater for, I think, 95% of the airlines that fly around the world. We also run programs for IATA, which are naturally we run in Montreal, Canada. Now we have been identified as a school of excellence here in the continent. We also are a regional ICAO training center of excellence, of which we are also continuing to keep that relationship. We have partnerships with a number of universities in the country, including Pretoria, VETS, Stellenbosch, a whole lot of other universities. As well as universities abroad, such as the Embry-Riddle in Atlanta, which is an aviation university, in order to beef up our programs and make sure that when we establish the fully-fledged academy, that it will be run on academic principles and not just as a department of ATNS, that it will not be reinventing the wheel, but will be taking best practice in the world. So that's the work that's been done. As the chairman and we have also touched on this, that we have partly working with the Council for Higher Education for vocational and professional qualifications for air traffic services personnel. And then, of course, the minister has supported this, and we although have not put it in writing, it's supported in principle. It's still a work in progress. These are just some of the awards we've received in 2018. ATNS was a top employer, received a top employer award. This was a recognition not only by government, but by the business community around the country. So we are very proud of that and very grateful for the men and women who are working for ATNS and who have contributed to this. This is the certification. And then getting into the financials. I'm going to, with your permission, Chairperson, request, Honorable Chairperson, that the CFO also assist me where I cannot talk the language of the accountants properly. What you will see that the revenue went down and our net profit after tax for the financial year was 228 versus the 243 in the previous year. And I will show you what were the issues really related to that. The balance sheet, you will see we're sitting at 2.7, which is saying that we are still adding value to the business from 2.4 from the previous year. There is a bit of a concern, and I know that the members have also cited the current assets and the cash at hand. I think we're sitting at 1.2 billion rands, if I'm not mistaken, that is sitting on the bank with a debt equity ratio of zero, of which is saying we are basically got a problem. It's a good problem, but we need to sort it out. It's going to be sorted out as we move forward, because as the chairman indicated, we started a development that will probably cost us in the region of about 3 billion rands, although it won't be us that we're going to be funding it. We are looking at a PPP, but the development of the new academy, the development of the new head office, the development of the new operations center, that will be the first phase, and of course the residential area for the students, of which we're looking at running it as a hotel, of which in off-peak hours, like in during the holidays, anyone can come and use that accommodation like other institutions do. Like I've seen in London Business School, they also have got the same philosophy in running those places. We're not expecting running properties, so obviously we will have to find someone to do that for us, probably AXA, because they've got a lot of properties that they are running, the Honorable Chair. But the key thing here is that whilst we've got all these, what I call the black spots in there, or the stains in our name and in our business in terms of the qualified report, the bigger picture is that we are still a very healthy business and a sustainable business, and we're still contributing and meeting our mandate, and we are doing that within our means. We have not as yet, since 1993, of when we came to the government and asked for two checks, of which we got 35 million check, and then the second one was about 20 million, which was used to pay salaries. And that was the last time we got a grant from government. Since then, we have grown, as I indicated, to over 1,200 employees, and we have managed to be self-sustainable. You will notice that in this slide, I'm just going to talk mainly to, you can look at the sub-bullets, that the revenue in general increased of 49 million from the last year, from the previous year, of which made that to be 3.3%, and the operational expenditure increased by 100 million, which was 9.8%. That is very clear that we had a net profit after tax of a decrease of 14.8 million, which is 6.1%. We do not want that. We want to reverse that picture. That is why I said earlier we are going to be looking at how we can reverse that picture, and of which is really the expansion, because 90% of our revenue is coming from the tariffs. And of course, the tariffs are determined by the economic regulator of what the final say, and what they give us is what we have to live with. And unfortunately, as we'll see later, that the airlines in South Africa, the frequency and the movements are very static, so we are not getting any increase in the movements, which will mean that we are not getting an increase in revenue from the tariff, which is the major source of our revenue. We did receive a qualified opinion, as I indicated, as you see on the next slide, and the factors leading to that was mainly assets and expenditure. And in assets, there was an issue on how we treated certain assets and the way we evaluated them and how we categorized them. They call it helping Madum Compacti. I can't get this word. I'm still trying to apologize, Honourable Members. But it's really the breakdown and categorizing the assets as they are. Like if you have a car, then you have to depreciate the engine on its own, you have to depreciate the body on its own, you have to depreciate the diff on its own or the gearbox. Mm-hmm. So we had not done that. We had just taken the asset as a whole. So that's the one of the things which was a finding in relation to assets. And of course, the late capitalization of assets and some of the assets of which could not be physically verified. And we did have an issue in relation to irregular expenditure, of which we have tightened the nose on that. And the plans going forward is that, or at least what we've done since with these findings, is that you'll see on the next slide that we brought in some assistants who come in and verify the assets for valuation of assets and then the monthly reconciliation. That is a gold team that is supposed to do this. They were supposed to finish in November and then extended to December and then now January. We are not very happy with them, but we have said January is the last date because we are starting with an interim audit if we wanted to verify this. But from what I understand in the feedback that we've received is that they are about 80% complete. So we said during the interim the external auditors can start sampling on the other assets that have been completed. We also, from the board side, have appointed, as the chairman indicated, a task team of the board that meets fortnightly in monitoring this. I monitor it on a daily basis, but the board monitors the task team on a fortnightly basis to see how we can resolve this. Because our intentions, as we indicated late last year to the committee, is that we do not want another qualified report or anything close to that. We are very, very, very proud that we've been used as a model and as a benchmark for other entities and as a light in the country, especially in the situation where we find some of the state-owned entities in right now. So we are very aware of the impact of this, that if the performing organizations are seen to be starting to slip and that what is happening and what is going on. So we have looked at that and you'll see in issues of irregular expenditures, there were issues of credit cards of which we've subsequently applied for exemption from the auditor or from Treasury. We have been granted a limited exemption on credit cards, so we will abide by that. And of course the supply chain management policies of which we need to strengthen and relook. Part of the thing that we've seen here is that our internal audit was not as strong as we thought. So the assurance with that with management and also goes up to internal audit, what was coming up to the board was not really a completely true picture. So we are who have put measures on that. We are strengthening an internal audit. We're having a new chief audit executive starting on the 1st of February. We've taken consequence management onto the relevant parties in relation to the supply chain management and procurement. We are very serious and we are still continuing to make sure that there's accountability in every aspect of this. Where there's been a misleading of the board as the authority, the accounting authority, I apologize. And of course, we are going to be, as I indicated, doing interim audits. We have started. The guys are on site as I speak. They started about a week ago. So they are going to be giving us the view on what they see. So I can say that, honorable members, honorable chair, that we are putting every effort on this, all hands on deck. We have prioritized this as the number one project or program for the organization to make sure that we get a clean slate as we move forward. And in terms of financial performance, that's just a summary. As I indicated, the area that we are concerned about is the debt equity ratio as well as the current ratio, which is very high. We're trying to bring it down to 2:1. And our ROCE also, which you'll see maybe in the annual report, that it reflected as 9.6. That was the decision of the external auditors, because that 20.1 that you see there, we use what we call the approach document coming from the regulator, so the formulas are not the same. What we've agreed on is that going forward, we are going to put a note on it and show this one, the RLCE, as the one that comes from the regulator formula, and then on the mode, and then show that if you were to calculate it using the standard formula, that's what it should be. So in this instance, we should have had on the note the 9.6 being reflected, of which was not reflected in this report. But going forward, we are going to reflect it. The turnover is pretty straightforward. You can see, as I indicated, that we're still making money. It looks like it is a good picture, but I'll show you just soon of the challenges. The net profit is relatively also fine. There is a debate of whether we should be making money. The legislation says we should be sustainable, and this is what we believe, that we need some money at hand to run our operations, especially with the airlines that are suddenly just going bankrupt overnight. And sometimes we have to ground aircraft or airlines because they are of non-payment. And when we ground airlines, it means that we cannot get our money that they owe us, and plus they cannot make more money. So we are hit twice. So we sit with that dilemma that we're saying, then how do we manage this if you have an airline that if you ground them so they can no longer make money? So basically you have to write off that amount, like for what was that right airline? And was it One Time? One Time we had to write off about 26 million rand. However, what we've done since then is that we have now bank guarantees, which covers about 2 months payments of each airline. So once they start getting into the red zone, then we start saying, it's either we're going to charge you, you'll fly as you go, you'll pay as you go, otherwise you don't take off, so that you don't increase your debt. And if you cannot pay us within a certain period, then we have no option, but we'll have to ground you. That goes for everyone. We're not discriminating whether it's international or a national carrier. Everyone falls under the same loop, because otherwise we will be the ones who will be seen to be breaching the provisions of the PFMA. You'll see the capital expenditure has gradually increased. There were some issues in terms of expenditures. I'm sure the committee has seen also that we've been struggling in the past in approving and executing these projects. This board now, when it started, it approved ₹500 million of projects, of which we are busy rolling them out. And there's certainly also another area where we're creating jobs. For every ₹1 million, I think there's one job created. So we are looking at that. Every expenditure that we put out there, it is also part of job creation. And we do forecast, as the chairman indicated, in the project that we are doing in terms of the development of our head office. We're looking at people like coming from Tembisa, because it's going to be close to the area. We're looking at people coming from Davidson, from Tsakane, from all those areas to participate in that development so that they benefit, the local communities also benefit. This is EBITDA for the 5-year performance. For 348 for the last financial year of which we are talking about here. And then I start to go now to the slides which explain a little bit what I was talking about earlier. You'll see there the traffic growth is sitting 2.1 on the 2019 and 3.9, 6, 11.2, and then 6. You'll see that that is relatively small. And also the actual one, oh sorry, the tariff growth, that is the tariff at the top. And then the traffic, you'll see that it's very static. It's sitting at about 2%, which is, if you average it, it's just under 1%. It's actually under 2%. So that says, if this is 90% of our revenue, where it comes from here, with our increase in operating costs, we need to have a different model, of which is what we have decided on in terms of our current strategy. you will see, what you see there, the categories on the left-hand side there, that is the minimum takeoff weight of the aircraft. You will see that the bulk of our revenue comes from the almost there at the middle, about 050 to 075 or 0575 to 100. That's where we more or less make our money. The rest are just here and there. So it is important that also, as I indicate, we do not dictate to airlines on what type of aircraft to use. They change, chop and change from smaller aircraft to larger aircraft, like you've seen now at Oratambo, that we're seeing more and more Airbus 380s coming into the country, that they are taking just one one aircraft or flight movement instead of like Air France used to fly to airlines every day to Paris, Charles de Gaulle. Now they are flying just one 380. And this slide here also shows you, if you look at the more focused on the second bottom line there, if you look at our operating cost as a percentage of revenue, we do not want that, especially if you look at year 18, 19, 20, and 21. And the bulk of that is sitting at staff costs, staff and related costs, because that means that we might start struggling with paying for or buying new infrastructure and so forth. So what is we are doing, it means since we cannot tell airlines what to fly, we cannot decide on where airports are, we cannot dictate how the economy of the country or of the world looks like, so we need to increase the cake, of which is why that the decision in terms of our strategy was to expand, to look at other markets in the continent and elsewhere, so that we can make the revenue areas bigger, and then we can be able to sustain the business. But as this picture is there, I'm not sorry putting in red flags here, but it just says that we need to do something now. And what we are doing, I believe that it's the correct thing, and the board believes that it's the correct thing to do. We need to bring that down to at least 70%. It can't be sitting at above 90%. So that is the situation that we're sitting with. And you'll see there, this is probably my last slide, if not the second to last slide. The red line there indicates the non-revenue movements. These are the guys who fly around the country for free. They are just about 600,000. This year, they are just below, probably about 500,000. And then the guys who are paying are the ones in the blue line. And you can see that they are below the guys who are not paying, who are paying, flying for free. So these are the rich guys on the red line who usually come from this area, who park their jets there because we charge everyone above 5,000 kilograms. Below that, we do not charge you unless you are flying to Oratambo. And however, the reality is that anything that flies in the airspace needs to be controlled in the controller space because it can cause an accident. So we have to plan when we look at resources and everything. We use the green line, which is the total of those lines. So we are planning and putting resources in place and 50% plus or minus of it, of which is to cater for people who are rich but who are not paying. And that is just the reality that we're sitting with. And it's something that we are revising. I can assure the Honorable Committee that we are really looking at this. We've looked at it before. It showed that if we do go and collect this money and what is the general global practice, is that usually they do not pay. We have to make them pay. And they are very reluctant even in the aircraft equipage on what the aircraft he has in terms of transponders, which means that we have to deploy more assets on the ground in order to detect them. Otherwise, we will not be able to detect them because they refuse to have the correct transponders. But other than that, I can say, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee, that the business is very healthy. we continue to and strive to still do what is correct and what is right. And what we've picked up now in terms of the qualified report, we are in a certain way okay with that things at least are out there so we can fix them. It's difficult to fix something that you do not know, because we did not know about these things before. Now we know about them, so we can deal with them so that we can improve our governance, and then we can get back to where the company needs to be and that you can be proud of and the country can be proud of. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. MT, and honorable members, there we are. The presentation has been very elaborate. I'm going to start with you, Honorable Ramatlakane. Honorable Humsinga, Honorable De Freitas, Mayor Noluchungu, then Honorable Banza, in that line. Honorable Ramatlakane.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And, of course, thanks the presentation.
Oh, before, there's an indication that breakfast is just outside the room. If members can have working breakfast, just go pick up and come and sit down so that we are able to continue with work. All invited.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chair. Well, that will help me to shorten my question. Chair, just where the presentation ended. Now, the CFO is talking, CEO is talking English. And then, when he speaks English, he loses some of us. It's not specific, it's jargons. Because I thought that on the red light and the green light and the blue light, he would speak more clearer. But I find him hesitant to speak clearer about, and he says, well, the practice is that they don't pay, but we were thinking about this. I thought maybe if you could be more specific, what is it that you need us to do in order to help to make sure that this revenue, you're not going to survive. If that line is maintained like that, you have the high number and the lower number paying and the high not paying. So you are just basically not going to make it. It means that there must be something that is required. As what is it that is required? Maybe it's people will say that there's too much regulation, but I believe that it is better to help them rather than not to help them, because then they basically decide and give you the rules, clarify the rules and what has to be done. At the beginning, people will not be happy, but the country going forward, we will be happy generally. So that's the one question I thought that the presentation was that the Tabane was a bit slippery. Maybe it's by design. You don't want to speak straight about it. then let me leave that because I think you will come back to that. I have another question about the what has gone wrong. I just want to find out. You said at the beginning that the qualification, there was you asked the question, what went wrong if the same auditor has been auditing us for the last 3 years and we've been getting a clean one. Now suddenly as a qualification. Now, you haven't answered that question as to exactly what you found out, what has gone wrong, except to say that to speak about misleading and so on. But I want to ask a direct question. This question is, as a responsible person, did you perhaps get used to the auditors? Get used to the auditors, and when you get used to the auditors, it becomes a bit of a brother or become a bit of a sister. On one hand, there's a lapsus of critical eye in ensuring that system works and system operates. So, or put differently, because that has not, it's not been explained, whether you did fire the CFO, and in firing the CFO, you brought another CFO which also did not quite understand, or the CFO resigned, and of course the system also let you, in fact the system dropped or failed you. So that's the third one. It's worrying a little bit. You did explain that you now want more oversight. You now want more oversight by the board over the implementation of the turnaround. And for that, you have now created a board task team. So I just have two questions on that. The first one is the board task team and the functionality of it. You said it's bi-weekly, or it meets. I just want to find out, normally the board has a function, which is a function that keeps accountability, making sure that it enforces accountability over the executives. Now, if you're saying this, you're almost blurring the function of the board to an extent that the board would become close to the functionality, to a degree of, some would call it, interference. Now, how are you going to make sure that you keep those boundaries clear in terms of that particular interference? Because if the executive are not optimally performing, there's a mechanism to deal with that. You don't create a mechanism by asking the board to do that function, or which is a function of the functionaries who are on full time. Now, I don't know, maybe the chair of the board will also explain to that. The second question that is related to that is, does that have a financial implications? Because as a board, you budget for a time, for a number of intervals meetings. Now, if you increase the intervals to the numbers, does it have any implications for your budget? And of course, the internal audit, did it function optimally? Because it's one of the structures that should be flickering the red light when you're getting closer to the problem, if it's functioning. But if it's not functioning, or if you don't take it serious, there's two sides of it. If you don't take it serious, you get into that. But if sometimes they also have they grow relationship of a brother and a sister, and they basically have a cake and the biscuits, they don't look at, there's no critical eye, then you end up into this. So I'm trying to find out that functionality in terms of helping the management to understand that there is a lapse, there's a breakdown, there is a system that is consequence management. You said to it, you were thinking about it. I thought you would say that you have acted on it. You have fired one, A fired B. Not that there is a, I'm wielding an axe. I'm not wielding an axe, but consequence management means that a particular, particularly when if there's a lie, you mentioned, I think you mentioned the words that people lied to the board, they didn't give you proper information and so on. If I heard you right, then it meant that there is something that has to be done for that to happen. Maybe you will say you have already acted, this is what has happened, because the question is whether there is integrity. When you lose the integrity in terms of, I'm not sure whether the sustainability happens going forward, if that's deliberate, because you work on a basis of trust and honesty. If something is this way, it's that way. So if you can just explain that, maybe I'll be closer to better. I leave other questions for other members because I wasn't sure the ballooning of the salary bill, what was the reason, but I think other members will pick up on that. Thank you.
Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. Over the past break, I had the opportunity to read up a bit, and all basic indications are that we have a normal activity trend that we would have a different cycle, and it suggested that we would have an above trend growth opposed to normal cycles in the sort of global airspace. So there's also strong suggestion of a disjuncture in terms of global airport capacity and airline demand, which would put your function under a lot of stress in keeping pace and avoiding a sudden chaos due to international expansion, because what the numbers that I've got hold of was that in the next 2 decades we would see 7.2 billion passenger load, and we would see a 70% growth to about 3,000 cargo aircraft. To what extent are we aligning towards these projections, and to what extent can we position ourselves to benefit from this, in that everybody's not so well aligned as I understand we might be, to then be of a service over a greater region, as you said something about hopping to India just now. My second question is around the opportunity that you expressed with the smaller private aircrafts, and the counter question in the suggestion that it is a revenue income which could have been overlooked till now, which could be looked at. I would like to know whether there is a particular strategy and what sort of service would one offer in that space, other than just a air control responsibility and tariff or license related income. Related to that is also the whole question of drones. I know that civil aviation to a large extent has the mandate over that, but then in another way there must be communication, there must be consultation between entities. So what is the airspace control position in terms of drone activity? That would certainly increase. Then just 2 or 3 questions on the financial side. On my page 18 of the copies where we've got the 2 slides, might be a good idea just to number the slides in future for reference. On your total assets, with an increase of 283 million between 2016 and 17, the alignment of that increase of 283 million opposed to what I've observed on page 17, where in the depreciation there's a much smaller related ratio. So the increase in assets of 283 million suggests that it's not reflecting under the depreciation column. So what type of assets would that be, other than ones that would have to be accommodated in a depreciation model? So I don't, I see a misalignment between the two there, and maybe you can just explain that. You also referred to issues that you had in terms of the auditing report with compilation and categorization of assets. How are you planning to fix this? Are you going to use a more detailed amortization model? And how would that then evaluate previous states or statements and balance sheets, since you would have used the old model, or did you change in the way that you applied the amortization the past year opposed to previous years? Just another remark that you also made, I think it was the chairman that made the remark, could be wrong there, but about buying versus developing talent, and the problem that we have that we train competence in the academy, and also with the fact that you have great plans for this future academy, and that the graduates from this academy then gets bought up by other countries. You mentioned other countries, and you boastingly mentioned that we don't buy talent, we develop talent, which might be a good thing, but I would like to hear your comment on retaining talent, because that to me is also just as important. Yes, it's great to contribute and to equip capacity in other regions and countries and so on as a product of South Africa, but then in a way we should then also have a strategy of retaining the best for ourselves, in that we need to develop the capacity locally as well. So just your position on that, and whether that's incorporated in your employment and staff strategy. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chair. Just a few questions I have. I don't see it anywhere in the actual report and in the presentation. What went wrong, and why is there a qualified report this time around? You can just unpack that a little bit more. You talk about the social responsibility that you've allocated money for. If you could just unpack it a little bit more, because often entities allocate funds for this kind of thing, but doesn't really speak to the work that they're doing. And in particular, when it comes to aviation, it's grossly underrepresented when it comes to aviation from poorer communities and from black communities. They generally aren't exposed, and as a result, you don't have young people who may have a very good aptitude for aviation, for AT&S type environment. So if you could just unpack that, how exactly are you going to go about that? And then I found it interesting when you spoke about Richards Bay, about a different air traffic control supplier. If you could just talk about that, and why is it a different one? I also found it interesting when you spoke about that, although I knew that we looked after essentially much of Namibia, Swaziland, and Lesotho, I wasn't aware that we were getting some kind of revenue from that. If you could just explain what is that arrangement like, how does it work? And then you do talk about an increase in staff, and there seems to be a dramatic increase. How is that matched up to your efficiency, to your outputs, and so forth? Because although it's all well and good to increase your staff, if that doesn't also grow with improvements, then that is a problem. So if you could just talk to us about that. And I think all the other questions I had were covered. Oh, sorry, and then on page 17, these things are not numbered. If you look at, talks about your statement of financial performance, you've got a foreign exchange gains, and losses, and there seems to be a difference here. And if you could just unpack that, why that's the case? Yeah. Yeah. No, from you know, you're very healthy, and now you're in 2016, and you're now at a loss. It's 2017. If you could just talk about that. Thanks very much.
Honorable Mpanza.
Thank you, Chairperson. There is a revolt next to me by the Honorable Sibande. He thinks that you are not giving him the opportunity. Not Chair, thank you very much. Mine is on the issue of the human resource. You have addressed, Babu Mtiani, the issue of the women and the challenges that we have faced in terms of them moving to senior management positions. But I just want to ask about the blacks, and in particular the Africans. What is your figure there in terms of senior management positions, and also people with disabilities? How many are also in senior management positions? And then, Chair, I just want also to ask about issues of transformation, and in particular, procuring the services. How is your PEE performance in terms of service providers? How many black companies, and in particular, again, African companies, women and youth, they are given opportunities to procure services at your company? I would really want to be to know what is your BE scorecard in that regard. Chair, this one might not be something that is relevant for the presentation, but maybe it's an issue that as a committee we might find answers somewhere else. But if they can answer, then I can be happy. Issue of pilots. They are predominantly white and white males. My question is that when are we transforming that sector as well? Where are the female pilots and black pilots? Even in the SOE, I've only seen one in Velase. I've never seen others as well. Then I've seen one female pilot in British Airways. But the number is very, very low in terms of those categories. So if you can answer them, I will be happy. But if you can't, then it's fine. But I think it's a matter that the committee needs to look at. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpanza, Honorable Nolichunga.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the issue of developing capacity and later losing it, you know, to other countries has been posed. The second one, my main concern is the issue where you are saying you have a plan to resolve audit findings, but you have not given us a clear indication as to how you are going to address the issue of supply chain management processes, because that is exactly where the road starts. You can have a beautiful, you know, balance sheet, you can have the best policies or practices and making money, but if you don't have a hold on your supply chain management procedures, you are doomed. I just want to know, you know, what mechanism do you have in place, or will you be putting in place to address that issue? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'll start by maybe congratulate the ATN
about their recent accolades which they've received, but nevertheless we are due to ask questions. Chairperson, you see, first of all, I was listening attentively so when they were giving a report about the issue of board meetings which are taking place fortnightly. May you please take us on board, because we don't want to experience what we have experienced with BRASA. I'm subject for corrections. I think there are guidelines in terms of the board meetings, that how many meetings are supposed to take place. But if my calculations serve well, if you are saying it fortnightly, that means you plus minus 24 meetings per year. Therefore, may you please clarify us, is that in compliance with the guidelines, or what is the status quo? And if any financial implication, therefore. And then, Chairperson, another thing which is worrying me, I'll just add on, because, you know, there is a disadvantage to come later. The issue of job creation, and then also the issue of the programs which you spoke about in terms of education. You see, my worry is that the previous government had a problem, we had a challenge of the total isolation by dividing us into former homelands. I wanted, may you please, I wanted to request you to take us on board about what is the status quo in terms of marketing yourself in order to attracting our own kids in that regard. Because if you're talking about Eastern Cape, the popular mistake which is happening is that people, when they talk about Eastern Cape, they talk about Metro only. They don't talk about the former disadvantaged areas. And when they talk about KZN, they talk about Durban. They don't talk about the disadvantaged areas where the population is confined. I can make a lot of examples. And then there was a question which was asked by my colleagues. Chairperson, allow me to make an example. We had, with why we are raising concern about some of these things, recognition of our own product. There was a person, his name was Mr. Ngabangobo, among of the first black nuclear scientists who trained in the Soviet Union. Some of the things which he used to tell us, we failed to believe him, but they're happening now. We're suffering about climate change. We're suffering about low shedding. He told us long ago. Therefore, I'm coming back that what, you see, I agree that we are in a global situation at the moment, but locally, in higher positions. What is your program to take people in higher positions? My colleague next to me nearly covered me, and other colleagues covered me about the issue of ATNs and aviation, and as well as pilots. As long in South Africa, there is no way of giving blacks trainings, because what is killing us is trainings. We don't own flights, those 14 chartered, whatever, we don't own them, so what do you expect? You can take a kit for a theory, but to get practical is very, very difficult. What is your role, therefore, in order to take them on board? The other one is that ATM is responsible for air traffic control, approximately 400%. My worry in the past, and even now I still got a concern, have you ever maybe finished in terms of auditing the lending strips, the private lending strip. Why I'm raising it? Who controls them? What is your linkage with them? Because in South Africa, we're so lucky, we don't have major airline accidents. But continuously, we do have these small chartered flight accidents. Who control them? Because as long as they are not accountable to anybody else, they do as much as they like. For an example, you can take your charter flight, a small one, while you're still on air, receiving a signal to say, hey, there is a flight coming, you ought to deviate. Maybe that can contribute to some of these accidents. And then also, Chairperson, what is worrying me, during your own input, you spoke about in terms of the net profit, under the net profit, you made an example of one time airline, which about 21 million, which was cut off. I'm not clear, I'm not sure. Because we had even Nationwide, I don't know whether before they went out, did you cut something or whatever. Because, you see, as long as our systems are not talking to each other, this thing will continue. In which sense? Why you left it with that amount to increase from 0 to 21 million? And the 21 million can make a difference in our townships. Lastly, Chairperson, it's about the issue of your, I mean, in terms of the AG's report. You see, I wanted you to find out once more. What mechanism do you have internal, in terms of internal audit? Because those are the key ones who are supposed to show you the red lines, if the red lines are going to happen. Do you have any structure which is linked to you, which is accountable to you, who links with the auditor general? Because those are the people who are supposed to sensitize you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll come in the second round.
Thank you very much. Honorable Khadebe, you're welcome. I don't know if you'd like to say something because the presentation was almost finished when you arrived.
Thank you, Chair. Compliments to you, to Chair, and
I
everybody.
I wanted to say that to honorable members and the team that is
yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I hope everybody has enjoyed the Christmas and the New Year. We're starting 2018 with a bang. The one question that I just have, Chair, I've just noticed that ATNS has referred their matters into King 3. I'm trying to check and establish whether have they realized that King 4 has already been affected from 2017, so that at least they can be able to be relevant. I guess one of the many problems that you also have is that you didn't comply because you overlooked what King 4 has been instructing you to do. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khadebe. Let me indicate that there may be some questions which will need extensive elaboration. Then you can be able to do it in writing. You are left with only 15 minutes to respond to honorable members. The questions that we believe you can be able to engage with us, because there are many questions which have been asked, some of them you may respond in writing, but normally we would request you to respond within 48 hours so that members can still be remembering what some of the issues were. Ms. Advocate Bahlele, to you and your team.
Maybe to start with the issue of the answer the honorable member on the issue of the task team. Well, what happened is that, as the CEO has mentioned, there were some areas of misrepresentation which were coming from the executives. And We are in the process of disciplining them. We are in a disciplinary inquiry, but we've already suspended them. The CFO is suspended. That's why we're having an acting CEO, CFO, and the company secretary. And the charges are relating to that, dereliction of duties. As a result, we then look at the issue to say, how do we address the issue of the findings and the issue of misstatements, because that's very critical in the so we said, we, in terms of Section 56 of the Public Finance Management Act, as the accounting authority, we have an obligation as the principal, even though we have delegated the powers to the executives, starting with the CFO, that we are the principals accountable to the executive authority and the parliament to ensure that the information we provide to the our principal being the executive authority and the parliament is accurate, and to show leadership. So the audit committee met. We have a new audit committee met and say, but we, when they look at issues, they realize that the books need to be cleaned up, because if we don't do that, it's a dereliction of duties. Obviously, it will be quite it won't be a permanent situation. It won't even take a year. We are looking at just to deal with it now. Even the committee has not yet sit, so we it will sit. I think this Friday, and one of the members of the task team is the chartered accountant, Mr. Mduduzi Ezakwe, who's a chartered accountant, is a new audit committee member. They look at that as an audit committee, which is a statutory committee, to say we really don't want repetition of wrong things. So we said, as a board, we said that is a good thing to do, and obviously considering the fact that we don't have to have a lot of special board meetings, we must be confined to what we are supposed to do. There will be some exception, but the critical issue is to ensure that we clean our books, because the task team is made out of the members of the audit committee and the internal auditors and some of the executive members. So in a way, it's more like an eagle's eye, so that whatever we report in terms of the PFMA, it's not the misrepresentation, it's not the misstatement of facts, which is quite serious. We had that before. Just to give example, the previous CFO has to base on a few misrepresentation that really affected the performance. So the audit committee, when they look at that, to say, but really, we can't allow that to happen. And that's the reason why he's charged. And the same person was charged also last year underwent a disciplinary inquiry and was found guilty on issues pertaining to procurement and so forth, and was given a warning. So we are saying definitely there is a reason to use an eagle's eye, so to say, and magnifying glass as the accounting authority to deal with the situation as it is. That's the reason. And then on the issue of supply chain management, I think now it's centralized, but I'll allow the acting CFO to deal with that. Mr. Zagwa, I think on the task team, can you maybe elaborate a bit, because it's quite important, on the issues identified.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the question was raised around what went wrong. Why are we getting a qualification? I think two issues came to our attention. One was the componentization of our assets, and also the issue of supply chain. On the issue of componentization, we had met as an audit committee and raised the issue of audit readiness so that we can be ready for the AG's audits. Now, the issue of componentization is a process that was supposed to have started so that we comply with the actual accounting standards. And it's quite an elaborate exercise. It needs specific skills because of the towers that we have. It's very special technology. To componentize them, you need to meet certain definitions before you can do that. So it's quite an exercise. So it's common practice that oversight structures are part of audit readiness. Blurring the line between practicing oversight and being part of management is something that we are aware of. It's something that was well debated. Clear roles were defined in terms of what our oversight is. We are not assisting management, but we are just playing oversight because we don't want this area to be an area of qualification again. So our job is to make sure that the componentization project is done. Componentization is not a long-term project. It's a very quick project. Specific people have been brought in to help us with that regard. So our job is just to do oversight. I don't think we'll have meetings over than more than a month or two. So that's the purpose of the task team. Could we have done better? Absolutely. I think a question was raised around the issue of the functioning of the internal audit. We have got a new CAE starting. I think it has already started. We met in a strategy session and we approved the new structure of the internal audit and the systems that they need to do their job. So we've looked at the capacity within internal audit so that we can strengthen the functioning of our internal assurance providers. also, we have stepped up our combined assurance model. In the past, management didn't submit management rep letters to the audit committee. We've asked that they do so that they give us assurance as oversight that the assets, the data, and all the information they are custodians of, it's valid, it's accurate, it's complete, because that's part of building a combined assurance model amongst all the assurance providers. And management are key parts of combined assurance. I think I'll stop there, Jefferson.
No. Chair, you're back now. You can gladly hand take over the chair. My reaction to the response, you know, I'm attracted to this, and Chair, with respect to the eagle's eye. I'm attracted to this this characterization of this. And you're saying oversight over the executive. Now I'm trying to visualize this oversight. What do you do? What are these functions of oversight that the task team has to perform? You've got the CEO of the company. They've identified the problem. That the problem that must be fixed is X. You've got a capacity, or you buy a capacity to do that. On top of it, you have this, what you call eagle's eye task team. And you say to have an oversight over this. I'm wondering, what is this function? If you were to list them, they're going to receive a report from the, to say, well, in terms of the action sheet that we had last week, we have done this one, two, three, four. What do they do? Is it financial implication? Why I'm asking this question, I'm persistent on. Every executive that works for a company with the CEO, CEO is a responsible person. The buck stops with him on a functional area. What does it mean to a CEO if the CEO now has to have an additional capacity called the Oversight Committee. And frankly, I don't know what the Oversight Committee does. You are saying oversight. I don't know whether they are judges to receive a report on what, on the action that the executive have to perform, which they are paid for to perform. Is the CEO of the company not capable in ensuring that those work are done? That requires additional eagle's eye. I'm borrowing your term, advocate. So that's my dilemma. I'm not touching what you are saying. We had a similar thing. I think I remember speaks about it. But we had a similar action of the task team or functioning board. The one word was functioning board, which ended up having to camp in the company to almost perform the functional duties of executive. And it created whole lots of problems. Because now you're blurring the responsibility and the roles. You no longer know whether the chair is a chair of the board or is a part of the executive. So that's what I'm just asking. And I'm sorry that I belabor the point, but I'm really worried about this word oversight of this task team, because we don't know what they do. And we don't know whether that competence which is given to the task team is not a competence of the CEO. I don't know.
If you can just switch on, oh yeah.
Yes, there's really a valid question, honorable member. There is that line that has to be drawn between executive and non-executive, and you have mentioned it properly. It's just that we, as you said, maybe we are, the fact that we had a qualified audit, it made us to overreact to the situation. And we look at that, because then we have to ask ourselves questions, what is really happening? Not that we are saying there's no... We have delegated the powers, as I said, in terms of Section 56 of the PFMA to the CEO, who have sub-delegated to the members of the executive. But then with us, we then say, at the end of the day, as the accounting authority, we are accountable to the executive authority, and there is a liability attached to that, joint and severally. So that's why I think the Audit and Risk Committee found it fit as a statutory committee to say maybe they need to look at this and that areas as an oversight role. That's why I use the way to ensure that at least we don't have problems that would really affect us. And another thing is that we are looking at issues of also liability and accountability. So, but then the issue of the task team, I think we need to look at it to say, can we do it in a different way? Maybe we, because we never even have the meeting, is something that was presented to the board recently. We can look at that, and we need to be guided by the portfolio committee. If that would be ideal, what would be the ideal position? But that's what we wanted to do, to show our seriousness to tackle the problem we are having in terms of issues of reporting and financial accountabilities, which is part of our fiduciary responsibilities. I will ask Mr.
Let me clarify this. And I'm happy that you speak about the authority, and as you speak about that, Section 56 you mentioned. Is it the board, is the board gravitating towards withdrawal of the powers from the CEO? Because if you use the section and you throw it on the table, vis-a-vis your responsibility as the board, you are gravitating because you say this is the delegated powers, we have delegated as the authority. Now we have the role to participate based on what we have delegated. Meaning, that role, while even though we have delegated, we have the still have to reserve the right to participate within that. And that participation, it's gravitating because, let me just put straight. Are you not happy with the CEO? It's functioning, performing its function. And therefore you want to create something else which is parallel, which is an oversight of yourself under the CEO. Because it sounds to me like that, and I'm sorry that I'm asking this direct question. Because the minute you throw the power, you say this is the functions derived, original, and therefore we have the right to go back onto the original power. You are, in a way, gravitating to withdrawing the powers and performing that power through the task team. And the CEO becomes an oversight which actually no authority. I have a problem and I'm worried about that. So speak straight to us. Because that's why I'm smelling. Am I wrong?
That way, just to answer the honorable member, what we are saying, even in the task team, the CEO is working with them as the main executive. What we are saying is that we don't, and the CEO is the director of the company. So what we are saying is that we, that's why I say maybe it's an issue of overreaction, so to put it, to say what can we do in the circumstances. But we have no intention of withdrawing the powers of the CEO. We understand the power delegated to the CEO. Then I would request also Mr. Zakhe to expand more on that. But it's more about the oversight to remedy a specific situation, which might not even take a long time, just to deal with the issues of that need to be dealt with.
Maybe let it not be a dialogue. Maybe the question should be, if you give the CEO instruction over what you are not happy about, is he unable to proceed in your absence because you come fortnightly to come and oversee what the CEO is doing? Maybe it becomes very easy when you put it like that to say, are you not comfortable that he will execute what the instructions that you have given him, because we know that this is going to lead you into another irregular expenditure into the future, because you're attending meetings on a regular basis like you're doing. It means expenditure over expenditure. We have seen that with some of the boards, those type of things happening. But at the same time, a compounding question is, did you get an authorization from the minister to can be able to do that so that you are able to offset this impasse that you are seeing, particularly with the liabilities? Honorable Sibande, that will be the last question so that we are able to take the next SOE.
Correct, Chairperson. I wanted to close it with this following. I'm scared of duplication in terms of responsibilities. Number two, Chairperson, you see, there wasn't a question which was asked by Honorable Khadebe earlier on. I think it's linked to this exactly. That instead of looking in terms of changing your approach, like for example, from King 3 to King 4, vice versa, King 4 to King 3, you decided to form another task team. What about financial implication? There are no financial implications? Because what I'm scared of, previously, our legal experience, is that some people, when we ask them, they will tell you this. At the end, we suffer in terms of financial implication. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay,
Thank you very much. We are, as I said, maybe one need to look, revisit the issue, the implementation of the testing. To us, the first thing is we decided, I think, one was that in our recent board meeting after the strike session. So we haven't implemented the issue of the testing. And I think we got a words of wisdom from our principal to really look at the issue and interrogate it thoroughly so that we can deal with it. We look at the issue of the financial implication. Indeed, when they attend the meeting, that trustee meeting, the director has to be paid. And we need to look at it to say, is it worth it? But we think it's worth it, and we are in the process of informing the department, the executive authority about it. But one will say that once we get from the questions, we then have to look to say what can be done before we implement and revisit the whole issue so that we don't solve a problem with another problem. One would actually say that. And I take the question as advice. Thank you.
Outstanding issues that needs to be put forward, like I have indicated, Mr. Mtier.
Thank you, Chair. I just needed clarity. You mentioned the period of 48 hours in terms of the written responses. Is that the case? 48 hours?
48 hours in terms of written responses. You will send them to the committee secretary. Honourable members, I think there's a lot. We really have not done a good service to ATNS. We'll still call them back because there's a number of things that I believe we have just scratched superficially in this regard. And I believe that when we call them in future, we'll give them ample time for us to can be able to deal with the critical issues. Because I know that at some stages, you, Mr. Matane, you didn't have a full complement of the board. Is it okay now? Still.
Maybe I have to repeat. Yeah, we don't have a full complement of the board. As you know, four directors have resigned. Actually, yeah, and we are only left with we are only three of us. But we meet the standard, the minimum in terms of memorandum of incorporation and the company sector. So we are discussing with the executive authority for the appointment of additional directors.
These are the other things that I say we have just scratched the surface and we need to go intensely into a whole lot of things. Thank you very much, Mr. Mpahlele. Thank you very much, Mr. Mtiani and the entire team from ATNS. We wish you a year that will be filled with fun, a year that will be able to deliver. This is the year of Hlahla Nelson Mandela, so we dare not fail him as he completes his 100 years. If he was alive, he would be turning 100 years. We dare not fail Mama Albertina Sisulu. These are the icons which we believe that if we follow their footsteps, we will be able to take South Africa to a higher trajectory. Mr. Msimang and your team, you should come and prepare close by. Bar di taba di busi khali lebalane mahlong. I hope you understand. It's very good when you are closer to the powers that be so that I can look you in the eye as you will be presenting. Thank you very much. If you can just give way for Samsa to come and set up and make a presentation. 5 minutes comfort break, honourable members, while they are preparing.
Thank you.